Maybe Brother Dale ought to introduce the speakers tonight. He does a good job in getting everybody excited about the program work of the church. But anyway, this is second service in this series. We got off to a great start this morning. Brother Sellers had an excellent lesson or sermon. I like to call them sermons, messages. Lessons all right too, but we are stuck on lesson around over the country. But he preaching again tonight on the topic raising children. And that's something that all of us need to pay closer attention to and be serious about it and do the best we can. Our children are certainly the objects of our affection and the ones that we love with all of our hearts. Should make any sacrifice, and we always do, generally speaking, any sacrifice necessary. And the most important thing is the soul of that child, and we need to consider that above everything else. And I could talk a long time, but we're going to turn the pulpit over to Brother Sellers, and looking forward to hearing him again tonight. Brother Boyd.
We appreciate the presence of each and every one again tonight, and are thankful for the interest that you have in spiritual things, especially those of you who are visiting with us tonight. We appreciate your presence and the encouragement that you offer to us. I wanted everybody to understand, we had lunch over at the Blackabies. I wanted everybody to understand that I planned to deliver this lesson before that meal. We had an enjoyable time over there. The Davises were there, Harold and LaVon were there, and of course Joshua and Josiah and Ezra and Amos were there as well. And we enjoyed, I enjoyed being with them and enjoyed the association together. Some months ago, the Family Circus cartoon presented a picture of a mother and father in the living room, and they were looking at their children over on this side of the living room, and the oldest little boy's got a football in his arm and he's running one way and he's just happy as he can be, and then Jeffy's got a crayon and a coloring book, he's running in another direction, and the little girl has a doll in her arms, and PJ the baby is sitting in the floor, all of them happy as can be, the dog's over here and asleep, toys scattered around the room, and they're all just little children over here. And then on the other side of the room, they're turned around and they're looking out the door. And as they're looking out the door, all of the children are grown, have their suitcases in their hands, or headed out the door, headed to their cars, and so forth. And the caption says, "Before you can turn around." I thought it was very appropriate. I think that some of the best advice that anybody ever gave us when our children first were born was to teach them, take the time to be with them, take the time to teach and train and instruct and guide them, because before you turn around, they're going to be grown and they're going to be going out the door. And I think that that's some of the best advice that we could give to young mothers and fathers, young parents, now. Before you turn around, your children will be grown. All of the instruction, all of the teaching that was possible for you to do for them will have been done. They will become what you have helped them to become. Remember, before you turn around, they'll be gone. In presenting a lesson on raising children also, I feel like a fella, David Wilkerson, who said no parent is in a position to claim to be an authority on parenthood, especially when he has children still so young that there has not yet been time to prove his effectiveness as a parent. And I think simply what he's saying is there are really no experts on raising children. We just simply turn to God's Word, consider the principles that are taught therein, and strive in our lives to raise our children according to the principles of God's Word. And that's what I want to do tonight. I know I've heard others say that before I had children, I knew what I would do in every situation. And then after my children came along, I wasn't so sure and ceased giving anybody advice after my children came along. So I sort of feel like that. And I recognize that I am not an expert in any sense of the way, but I, again, just like anybody else, can consider the principles that are given in God's Word, set them forth, and strive to do those things in our lives. Now, in looking at this particular subject, the raising children, Weldon mentioned how significant our children are to us, how important they are. When talking about this particular subject, there are so many things that one would consider the most important thing. You may be talking to somebody over here and you'd say, well, about raising children, the most important thing is this. And then maybe you might be talking to somebody else and you'd say, well, the most important thing is this. And so you give some other answer over here. Because there are so many different things to consider, so many very important things to consider. We don't know just exactly where they would go on the list that begins with number one. And so I want to just mention some of those things that are all the most important things as we consider the matter of raising our children. Now, for example, the most important thing, your most important task as a parent will be to successfully raise your children. And what I mean by successfully raising our children is not just the matter of seeing that they grow up, go to school, get an education, then maybe go to college, are able to get a job, or maybe a good paying job, able to get married and such as that. I'm not just talking about those things, but when I talk about successfully raising our children, I'm talking about raising them to love the Lord. Now, again, Brother Warnock mentioned the fact that the most important thing is that we raise our children to love God and to serve Him and to be servants of His when they grow up and when they're gone away from us. I think, again, we need to emphasize that the most important task that I have as a parent is to successfully raise my children to grow up in the fear of the Lord. But now, here's another thing, and again, I might be talking to somebody else. The most important thing for me to recognize as a parent is that I am going to, and you are going to, spend some time with your children. That is, all things being equal, either you'll spend time teaching and training and guiding them in the way that they should go while they are young, or you'll spend time with them later on trying to correct things that they've done and trying to get them back, trying to straighten them out later on after they're gone. But again, you will spend time with your children. I really think that that is an important thing for us to consider. I read something the other day that kind of surprised me. It said that American parents spend less time with their children than any other nation in the world, including Russia. And again, that kind of surprised me. I don't think that that kind of statistic is true among those who are children of God. It can't be if we're going to raise our children as we ought to. You will spend time with your children. Here's another most important thing for us to recognize, and that is that your children will become what you mold them to be, either intentionally or unintentionally. There's going to come a time, somebody says, that your children are going to be what your example showed them to be and not what your advice was. They'll follow your example and not your advice. It's important that we recognize that our children are going to become what we help to mold them to be. They're going to watch our example. I remember when we lived in Kentucky, there was a fellow that had become unfaithful to the Lord, and we went to talk with him about his soul and about his family and the influence that he was having on his family. And when I brought up about his having influence on his family, he couldn't believe it. He said, I'm not going to have any influence on my family. Well, I couldn't believe that he'd make a statement like that, or that anyone would consider going through this life and especially not having influence on his children. You're going to. And they're going to become what you mold them to be, either intentionally or unintentionally. All right, here's another most important thing as far as raising children. We need to begin early with moral training, character building begins immediately. Don't wait until they're 5, 6, 7 years old. Begin character building immediately. Somebody suggested, I think this is pretty good, that we decide when our children are young, that we decide what kind of teenagers we want them to become, and then start training them accordingly, and start training them early. Begin early with moral training. Now, I have more to say about that as we proceed in the lesson. But here's another most important thing. You think about this. How would you answer this particular statement, these particular blanks? And this is a quote, the single most important factor in producing bright, happy, socially attractive children is what? Now, how would you answer that? Well, now, listen to this. Professor Burton L. White of Harvard University conducted a study to determine what produces bright, happy, socially attractive children. And I'm aware of the fact that statistics are not always everything they're supposed to be, and such studies are not always what they're supposed to be. But there have been a number of studies like this that I think point in the same direction. But anyway, he did a study to determine what produces bright, happy, socially attractive children. Here's a statement about his conclusions. He said this: the brightest, happiest, most charming children spend their earliest years listening to adult conversations, roaming freely about their homes, and spending a lot of time staring. The single most important factor in this is the mother, he says. She has a greater influence over a child's experiences than anyone else. A rich social experience is the best thing you can provide to ensure a good mind. This means seeking attention from the mother, following her around, and learning cooperation. The mother is an important factor in the home, obviously. Here's another most important thing to remember. We need to remember, and I think we need to remind ourselves of this often. Remember, as a parent, it is not your job as a parent to see that your child gets everything that everybody else at school gets, or for that matter, everything that everybody at church might get. Again, it's our job as parents to successfully raise our children. Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy 3:15, from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation. And so it is not our task to see that our children get everything that everybody else might get. Now, here's another most important thing. And again, difficult to determine how far up the list it might go. And we might say, somebody says, what is the most important thing you can tell me? And this might be the answer to them. And that is, don't listen to the losers. Weldon tells me that you've just recently studied a book, Train Up a Child. And the author of that book talks about this particular factor. But it is a matter of fact that a lot of times, those who have the most disobedient, disrespectful children are the ones who want to tell you how it ought to be done. And they may criticize strictness, they may criticize discipline. It's important that you look at the results of the home, of the family, of the children, and whether you particularly like the folks or not, listen to the winners. Don't listen to the losers. And then one other most important thing is to recognize that we go home. That is, adults. We as parents are adults. We go home because there is security there. There's not just four walls there. There's not just a place to go, but there is security there. Well, our children want the same thing. Our children need the security of a stable home where mom and dad love each other and are at home. Okay, now there may be a lot of other things that you could think of that you would consider the most important thing. These are just a few of those things that I believe are the most important things as we consider the matter of raising our children as God would have us to raise our children. Now, in the book Training Up a Child or Train Up a Child, the author suggests three philosophies of child raising. One of them's the autocratic philosophy, another's the democratic philosophy, and another's the laissez-faire philosophy of child raising. Now, in the autocratic home, parents are the authority.
Now, children make suggestions and they present ideas and so forth, but the parent's word is the final word, and hassling and arguing are not permitted in the autocratic home. In the democratic home, children are given equal vote with their parents. And when a conflict arises in the democratic family, they just try to satisfy everybody in that kind of home. And then the laissez-faire philosophy is, again, just sort of a hands-off philosophy, and the parents have the idea we'll just sort of leave the child to himself, leave the child alone, and just sort of hope that he's going to turn out all right. Now, it is tragic, I believe, to recognize the fact that there are a lot of parents in this world today who sort of take that philosophy, not because they have planned that, but simply because they have no plan at all about their homes. Well, let me just emphasize here at this point in the lesson that whatever you might call it, the autocratic philosophy in which the parents are the authority and the children are subject to the parent, that is the Bible way. Ephesians 6 and verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Colossians 3 and verse 20, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. And so she called the autocratic system is the Bible way. It's the way that we need to strive to bring up our children and to raise them. All right, now, let me just sort of present a negative picture. And I think that all Christians sometimes... we fail even maybe to admit this to ourselves, but I think that Christians, all Christians, are aware of the fact that there are forces at work in our society today that would destroy the family and would just simply try to do away with what we call the nuclear family, with a father and mother and children in the family. Their idea of a family is any kind of relationship that folks might have. It would include homosexual relations, communal relations, or just folks living together or what have you. But there are forces at work that would destroy the family and everything that God says about the family. And so the picture in society today is really not a very good picture. Now, there was some researchers from Johns Hopkins University that did some studies about the family, and they came up with an article that described, or was supposed to describe, the American family in the year 2000. And they used the word diversity to describe the American family of the future. And here were just a few of the things that they predicted. And as far as I can tell, not very much different from what they predict for 2000. Really not that much different from what we see in society today. But here are just some of the things they said. For example, by 2000, half of all marriages begun in the 1980s will have ended in divorce. 50%. Now, they tell me that the divorce rate is not as high as it was, but that's a prediction that they made. Now, then they say unmarried couples living together will triple. Now, I'll tell you, we make the statement, nothing surprises me anymore. Well, I'm not that way. And I hope that as long as I might be able to live, that there are some things like that that will never cease to amaze me. And that just simply does. The idea of couples just simply living together in what the Bible calls whoredom or fornication without any guilt or thinking that they're just doing all right. It just simply amazes me. But they say by 2000, unmarried couples living together will triple. Read an article in the Indianapolis newspaper some time back, and it was entitled, Unwed Couples Hit Record High. And they said there are over 2 million couples living together without the benefit of marriage. That is a tragic thing in our society today. But anyway, the report went on saying that 1 of 4 children will not live with both parents. Single parent homes. Teenage pregnancies up, adolescent suicides up, birth rates down, they say. And so not a pretty picture, they say, for the future. Another thing, and this is sort of negative too, is in regard to the matter of raising children and us being able to raise our children as we ought to, I think it's important to notice that the school scene has changed as well. Back in 1940, now I was just a kid, well, as a matter of fact, I was born in 1940, but I went to school in the years following that. The top offenses in school, and I can remember some of these when I was in school, running in the hallway, chewing gum, wearing improper clothing, which would include even shirt tails out, making noise, not putting paper in the wastebasket and such as that. Well, in 40 years, by 1980, the top offenses are much different than that, and not in any particular order. Here they are: robbery, assault, personal theft, burglary, drug abuse, arson, bombings, alcohol abuse, carrying weapons, absenteeism, vandalism, murder, extortion. All right, now, the reason that I mention that is just simply to point out that our kids, our children today, obviously face more serious obstacles than I did when I was in school. And thus, our job as parents becomes more important and more difficult. But yet, we cannot, regardless of what obstacles there might be, give up. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4. And that regardless, again, of what obstacles we might have to face. Now, I think just along that line, it is important to recognize that it is totally unfair for parents to bring children into this world and then, because of problems that come along and because of obstacles, simply throw up their hands in surrender to the forces that alienate our children and destroy the security of our homes. Now, I've seen parents do that just simply because of circumstances, give up and not even try anymore. I'm saying that we must continue to fight against those things that alienate our children from us. Somebody made this statement, said, we in America have surrendered our children too easily. We've said TV is too influential. Peer pressure's too strong. Music has too much influence on our children. And then we've just given up the fact. We cannot afford to do any such thing. Now again, that's just sort of the negative picture of what they're saying about the family. Now, I'm saying that as Christians, we don't have to be a part of the statistics. Our homes don't have to be like that if we work on properly raising our children. Now, let me just now mention some important factors in raising our children successfully. And let me say this. You may think of other things that are just as important as these things. But these are some of the things I think we need to take into consideration in regard to the matter of raising our children as God would have us to raise them. Now, I don't know what your picture of the home might be, but it is a matter of fact that nothing, and I believe that God intended it to be this way from the very beginning, nothing is more fulfilling or pleasant than a home as God designed it. Nothing can be more fulfilling or happy than the home, again, as God designed it. Now, important factors as far as raising our children successfully. Number one, and I believe that this is number one in the proper place, I believe that we have to have and we must teach our children the same thing, to have respect for God's plan for the home. He is the author of the home. God is the one who instituted the home. He started marriage. He started the home from the very beginning. Now, there are those, again, in our society who have the idea that somewhere back in time, some caveman decided it'd be a good idea to choose one woman and to live with her and to raise children and to establish a home. Nothing such as that happened. The home was not instituted by some man or by some group of men. I don't care how intelligent they might have been. God instituted the home. He is its author. He is the one who gives us the plan for the home, its organization, how it ought to be run. And if we respect that, then our homes can be what God would have them to be. Our homes don't stand a chance of being happy places if we neglect God's plan for the home. Over in Ephesians 5, 21 to 33, Paul talks about the home. He talks about the wife being in subjection to the husband. He talks about the husband being the head of the home. He talks about the husband not being a dictator, but rather loving his wife as himself. He talks in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, of children being obedient to their parents. He also talks about fathers bringing their children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, that is the Lord's plan. God gave the home organization. He put the husband and father at the head of that home, the wife and mother as the heart of that home, and children, he says in Psalm 127, are God's gift. to that home. I think, again, now let me just emphasize that it's important that no home can be what it ought to be if we reject or neglect God's organization. When a wife rules the roost, or when children rule by rebellion, the home is not going to be the happy place that it ought to be, or that it can be. And also, there can be no security in that kind of home. I think also we should emphasize that it requires sacrifice and work to get all of the parts working together in order to accomplish that. I believe that that is an important factor in raising our children successfully, to understand ourselves as parents and to teach our children the very same thing, that we must respect God's plan for our home. Now, this is another, I believe, important factor in raising our children, and that is that parents need to develop a healthy self-image. Let me just say here that I'm not teaching nor advocating some sort of a self-love type attitude toward ourselves. I'm not teaching, I'm not advocating some sort of a conceited attitude. Our confidence must be in the Lord, understand, but we're made in the very image of God. We must develop a healthy self-image in contrast to the attitude that looks with contempt upon oneself. And I've known people like that. Parents need to have and develop a healthy self-image. Now, somebody said, you can do anything better if you think well of yourself, including raising your children. And again, this is in contrast to having contempt for oneself. And I would emphasize as well just here that it is necessary for a person to have his life in order, that is, for him to be acceptable to God, be a New Testament Christian, and be faithful to God, in order for him to rightfully have a healthy self-image. But also, like the parent needs to have and develop a healthy self-image, children also need a healthy self-image. Now again, understand that I'm not saying we should develop into our children some sort of an inordinate pride or conceit or self-love, but the child needs a healthy self-image. One author mentioned a concert pianist, he said, of outstanding talent, who has resolved never to play in public again because she has such low self-esteem, he says. And then he comments, he said, there is no doubt about it, a lack of self-confidence can completely immobilize a talented person simply through the threat of failure, he says. And our children need to know that we respect them and that they are not dummies, that they are not stupid and such as that. I heard of, I don't even know who it was, but it was the report was that a well-known gospel preacher was always in public belittling his children, making them appear dumb and stupid and such as that, and just really lowering them and lowering their self-esteem. And I think it's important along this line that we recognize that such things as obesity, rebellion, promiscuousness, turning to drugs and so forth are all signs of a poor self-image. The child needs a healthy self-image, and the parents can help in that regard. Now, one of the most important things I think that we could consider in regard to raising our children is just to emphasize, too, that parents must require obedience of their children. It seems like to me that every generation that comes along tries to find some way around what God says about discipline. Recently, there's a new book that's come out entitled How to Really Love Your Child. I've forgotten the author's name. It's generally a good book, and he has some good things to say. But when it comes to the matter of discipline, he denies completely what God says in His Word about the need for discipline in a child's life. Well, I just emphasize here, one of the most important things about raising our children is just simply the fact that we as parents must require obedience of our children. Now, notice again that the Bible way is the autocratic way, or again, whatever you might want to call that. Parents are the authority. Parents provide the training that corrects and molds and strengthens and perfects the child. Again, Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. This is right. Honor your father and your mother, he says. Now, it was it's been several months ago now, there was a family that was becoming weak spiritually, and we decided to, another member and I decided to go visit them. And while we were visiting them, and of course I was acquainted already with their three-year-old son, but I just want to mention that the three-year-old son had a very serious handicap, very sadly handicapped. He's, again, about 3 years old. But when you look at the little boy physically, he is strong, he's healthy, he's handsome, little curly-head little boy. Mentally, he's bright and intelligent and alert. And somebody says, well, how in the world could the child be handicapped? He's not physically handicapped, not mentally handicapped. He is behaviorally handicapped. He is rude, disrespectful, he's unkind, selfish, rebellious. He would go around the room spitting on whoever might be there, or cursing, or just all of those kind of things. And he just rebellious child. And the problem was, he's undisciplined. The problem is the parents' lack of discipline in his life. And he is handicapped. And life is one day going to be extremely hard on that young man. The parents really are not being fair to that child. Someone observed that the child who has not been disciplined with love by his little world, that is in his family, will be disciplined without love by the big world. And that's just exactly so. Discipline is not a bad word. Discipline is simply teaching the child the way that he should go. And it is a desirable thing. Train up a child in the way that he should go, Solomon said in Proverbs 22 and verse 6. And he said also in Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth the rod hateth his son. Now that's what the Bible says about it. It's important to emphasize in regard to the matter of discipline that actually proper discipline, and I'm not talking here about, I don't believe that Solomon is talking about just beating a child half to death. He's not saying that at all. But proper discipline, biblical discipline, offers security to the child. Now the child knows where you stand, and the child knows how far that you're going to go. And as a matter of fact, children are continually testing the walls, not trying necessarily to get out, but just seeing that you're still there and that you still take stands on these things. This gives the child security. And by the way, that is exactly why it's so dangerous for a parent to allow sassy and belittling backtalk from his child. Because again, the child's security is wrapped up in a parent to whom he can look for strength. And when the child belittles the parent and gets by with it, he no longer has somebody to look up to, and the security is gone. Children need and desire and deserve discipline. Now, in the book we mentioned a little while ago that you all have studied, Training Up a Child, the author mentions some basic facts on teaching obedience. Now, I'm not going to mention all of them, but some of them are kind of interesting. She says, for example, love and discipline don't conflict. There's no conflict between love and discipline. As a matter of fact, in Hebrews the 12th chapter, the author of the book of Hebrews points out that the child who goes undisciplined is being treated as though he were illegitimate. He says, love and discipline go hand in hand. And then she mentions another basic fact on teaching obedience. Says your child needs to learn respect for authority. She said also that the parents are the child's first authority. And if we as parents do not teach them respect for us, then they're going to go somewhere else, and they're going to have to learn respect for authority somewhere else. And that's tragic. She mentioned also, and I thought this was kind of interesting, to discipline, she says, you need a rod. Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth the rod hateth his son. And a rod simply is a switch. Another thing that is mentioned, basic facts on teaching obedience. Start teaching obedience early. Don't wait until they're 5 and 6 or 7 years old, but start teaching obedience early. And then one other thing that was especially of interest to me is that the author mentioned to make spanking an event. To make spanking an event. Now, my mother was born in Austria. She remembered coming to this country when she was 10 or 11 years old. She never read any of these books. But I can remember the time that my little brother and I started a fire in the garage. And now it may not be as bad as you think right now. The garage didn't have a wooden floor, but it had a gravel floor, and the front door was open. It was not closed. But we decided we'd build a fire in the garage, and we did. We had a pretty good fire going there. Well, my mother smelled fire. She followed her nose to where the fire was, scared us to death when we saw her coming, and we knew what was coming after that. But anyway, after she put the fire out, got that all out, we got a lecture, first of all, on the dangers of starting a fire when there were flammable liquids around, gasoline over in the corner and paint cans over here and so forth. After that, now, we were allowed to choose our own switches. And now they had to meet certain qualifications, had to be the right size and everything, but she allowed us to choose our own switches and then marched us into the bedroom and used our switches to wear us out. Now, she made an event out of that. I have never forgotten that. We never started another fire in the garage. Well, make spanking an event. The child will benefit from that and will learn from that. Another factor important in raising children, and I mentioned that I would say more about this later, start early on spiritual training. There are a lot of good examples in the Bible of this very thing. Samuel, Hannah, the mother of Samuel, started early training him to know God, to know God's word. Timothy, likewise, his mother and his grandmother, even though the father was not a Christian, they started early training him and teaching him what God would have him to know. Someone made this statement, and this is kind of sobering to me. At age five, the child's parents are his role models. The parents are the persons to whom the child looks for direction in every aspect of life. Again, that ought to be really sobering to us, that our children look to us for every answer in life. They don't care then what kind of car we drive or how big the house is or how much money we might have. I remember hearing the story of the three little boys talking about their daddies. And one of them said, my daddy shook hands with the governor of Tennessee. And second little boy said, well, my daddy was in the same room with President Reagan. And the third little boy, his daddy was not quite as affluent as either one of these, but he stopped to think. He says, my daddy knows God. And that was his answer to all of these. Well, perhaps the little boy whose daddy knew God was providing for him more than the others could ever provide. At age five, the child's parents are his role models. We need to remember that. Start early on spiritual training. Provide the right kind of example for them. Pray for each child every day. Pray with them. Learn to depend on God. And it's important along this line, too, that families worship together. Nothing brings husbands and wives and children together more effectively than a face-to-face encounter with the Creator of families. I believe that. Worship together, and not only in the set-aside assemblies of the church, but worship together at home. Sing together and pray together. Teach the children about the church. Teach them about Jesus. Teach them about God. Teach them His Word. And at the same time, still talking about spiritual training, we need, as Christians, to teach our children respect for sacred things. There are too many in our society today that have absolutely no respect for those things that ought to mean everything to us in this life. Let's teach our children about God. Let's teach them respect for the Bible and God. Let's teach them respect for Jesus and His church. In the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, verses 6 through 9, Moses commanded the children of Israel to take God's words and put them in their own heart, make them a part of their own life, and then teach them diligently. Drill them into your children. Wherever you are, keep God's word before them at all times, he says. Let us teach respect for sacred things. And not only that, all sources, at least all conservative sources, what I'd call conservative sources, insist on a strong moral convictions being built into the child as the child grows up. Now, there have been those in the past who've suggested we ought not to try to teach our child morals and such as that. That's not so at all. Let us Let us build strong moral convictions into the lives of our children. Honesty and modesty and integrity and kindness and the importance of a good name. Let us instill those principles into our child. Let us warn them of drugs and drink and cigarettes. Let us teach them to shun immorality and fornication and adultery and all of that. Another thing that's important in successfully raising children is just simply to remember that it takes time. For a child, love, someone said, is spelled T-I-M-E. My little 7-year-old girl had time with that. She just didn't believe it, but anyway, that's so. For a child, love is spelled T-I-M-E. Now, I've heard a lot of people say, if I had life to live over again. I've read a lot that folks have made the statement, if I had life to live over again, I'd spend more time with my family. I'd spend more time with my children and such as that. Now, you know, over the past, I'd say 10 years, we've gotten this idea from folks that we spend, they say, quality time with our children. And here they've got 3 jobs, the husband's got 3 jobs, and the wife's got 2, and they spend an hour or 2 on the weekend with their children. Well, this quality time idea, I believe, actually is a cop-out to excuse our neglect of our children. And it is a matter of fact that if there is not some quantity to it, the time is not going to be quality time. Now, that's just a matter of fact there. And now, once more, the mother is the single most important factor in raising bright and happy and intelligent children. Children want their mothers around when they're small. They need their mothers to be at home when they come home from school and such as that. I ran across a poem. It is a poem. But anyway, it was an ad. It was placed in a newspaper. And it was entitled, Wanted Mothers, and it goes like this. We're hiring mothers, and we need them right away. You must be filled with peace and joy and vow that you will stay. You must appreciate a flower when it's given without a stem. Marvel at an ugly rock as if it were a gem. You must possess a wealth of love, be wise, controlled, alert, have management ability, and make a good dessert. Expertise in finance and a flair for decorating, knowledge of psychiatry and Band-Aid applicating. Willing to accommodate pet relationships, detective skills in cases like the missing chocolate chips, qualified and confident in diplomatic circles, adolescent counseling, in short, performing miracles, adept at kissing bruises and using rocking chairs, capable of running community affairs, a magician in the kitchen with a pound of hamburger, an ability to touch a cheek and know its temperature. If you think you qualify and you've had experience and you understand completely that you make the difference between a world that's filled with fear and a world that's filled with joy, call us now. We want you to be in our employ. I think it's important to emphasize here, too, that dads need to spend time with their children as well. Remember, it takes time to raise children. And then finally, I think it's important to emphasize in successfully raising our children, parents need to oversee and restrict the child's entertainment. With all that is available in the entertainment realm today, it is just impossible for us to just say, you go ahead and you do what you want to and be entertained any way that you want to and expect those children to come out of that and be all right. The TV, movies, music, books, and so forth, are all many times, not all, but many of them are so corrupt that parents need to oversee and restrict their child's entertainment. Now, you know, if we knew that somebody was coming to school, to our child's school, and was going to promote incest and murder and rape and suicide and drug abuse, the use of cocaine and so forth, and we knew that they were going to promote those things, parents would move the world to prevent such a speaker at their school speaking to their child. And yet at the same time, the fact is that many of those same parents, knowingly or unknowingly, provide money for their children to buy music that advocates all of that and more many times. If you doubt that, go to the music store and check the top 10 or the top 20 songs and see what's being advocated by those things. Back in Brownsburg, we have a question box, and some time back, somebody dropped a question in the question box, and it went something like this, said, can I go to, they mentioned something specific, but it was some sort of a concert where ungodly people were going to be performing and ungodly things were going to be said. Can I go to a concert or go to something like that and just simply enjoy the music and block out the immorality and the wicked talk and such as that? And in answering that, I just simply pointed out that that is absolutely impossible. Because actually, we become morally that which goes into our mind. What goes into our minds and into our hearts is the kind of person that we become. Again, whether knowingly or meaningly or unmeaningly. Now, we have, as parents, a responsibility to help control what goes into our children's minds. Statistics say that by the time a child is in high school, he or she has watched 15,000 hours of TV, listened to 11,000 hours of music. And somebody else has said that TV is not only dangerous because of what it promotes, but also because of what it prevents. And I believe that that's so. It prevents making conversation. It prevents really being together. It develops in the child an unthinking mind. Now again, you may be able to think of a lot of other things that are important in raising children, or in successfully raising children, in bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But let me close in this way, and you just think about this. Ask yourself the question, is God the builder of my home? Is Christ really the Lord of my life? And I think young people need to think about that particular question too, because that really is the bottom line, isn't it? That's really what we're striving to do. We're striving to teach our children what they need to know in order for them to be what God would have them to be. We're striving to be that ourselves, teach our children the very same thing so that we can be in heaven together. Basically, we're talking about salvation, ours and the salvation of our children. It may be that you're here tonight, a parent who's not a Christian. I